of Perek Vav, chapter 6. Last time we discussed the song of the cows, who brought the Aron back, and bringing a carbon using the wood from the wagon, and the animals. And now the Jews have their Aron back. I might have expected certain things when the Aron comes back. I might have expected a big celebration. I might have expected everybody goes home happy. But if I expected those things, frankly, that would just mean I didn't know the Jewish people very well. That's not the way things work. So if you take a look in Perek Vav Pasuk Yud Tes, chapter 6, sentence 19. Vayach be'anshei, well, just a reminder, they put the Aron on a stone, which is in the field of a fellow named Yehoshua of Beit Shemesh. And that's really all we know about him. Vayach be'anshei veis Shemesh. God struck the people of Beit Shemesh. Ki ra'u ba'aron Hashem. Literally, because they had seen in the Aron of God. Vayach ba'am shivim ish, chamishim elef ish. And he struck in the nation, and then you get an odd-sounding number. Let's make the rounds of any translations that people are using. Chuck, you've got JPS, right? How many people were struck according to JPS?
50,000.
No, there's got to be something else. He struck in the nation.
He struck down 70 men among the people and 50,000 men.
70 men among the people and 50,000 men. Does that number sound right to you?
I didn't think Beit Shemesh had 50,000 men.
That's one problem, is where in the world are they finding 50,000 people? And what else is a problem? The presentation of the number itself. I don't begin to understand that. And what does that even mean? 70 and, like, we tend to assume that the big numbers that we find in Chumash are round numbers. Right? When all the Shvatim in the censuses end in hundreds, except for one case where it ends in a 50, we don't really assume that that's because Jews reproduce in round numbers. We assume that you're just getting a round number. The, 50,000 and 70 is strange.
Well, how many? 70 is a significant number.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be 70 at that time.
You tell me.
Wasn't that how many people were the senior people, the elders?
The Zakenim, right. The elders are 70, but how that's going to fit here, and especially when we haven't really mentioned elders before, is unclear to me. Anyone have a non-JPS translation? Ori, what do you have?
He spoke of the people, 70 men, and 50,000 men.
Okay, so that moves the among the people line, but it does not solve our problems. You're using Sansino, Ori?
Yeah.
Okay, anyone have a good old-fashioned art scroll? So to speak? Yeah, Idan, what do you have?
Struck among them 70 men, 50,000 men.
All right, well, that didn't do me any good, though. But thank you. So, something's fishy here. Yeah, Byron? Right, so when we get to Mefarshim, then we'll have to look at Targum Yonasan, and you are correct. The Mefarshim are not going to leave us high and dry on this. If anything, we will have too many answers. But I was curious to see how the English navigated this. Well, let's see what happens.
How about if we look at the Shivim Ish, the ones indicating as they did?
Then it should be Vayaku. Then it would have to be Vayaku Ba'am.
So
no, but if you're saying the 70 are the hitters, then it should be Vayakuba am Shivim Ish Chamishi, and it's still very awkward. Well, let's see what we do. Vayis Abelu Ha'am, the people grieved, Ki Ika Hashem Ba'am Makagadola, Hashem has struck them with a great plague, a great blow, whatever this is. By the way, that's another weakness in saying the 70 hit, is we have no point where there's an instruction to anybody to do that. It would be very strange to attribute it to God if really what it is a group of 70 hitting people. Vayomru Anshei Beis Shemesh, Mi yuchal la'amod lifnei Hashem Elokim HaKadosh Hazeh. The people of Beit Shemesh say, whoever's left alive after 50,000 of them are dead, they say, who in the world can stand before this holy God? Ve'al mi ya'aleh me'aleinu. And where can we send it? Right? We've burned through the five Plishti cities. That's not an option. So, you know, who can we choose to send to? Vayishlechu malachim liyoshvei kiryat ya'arim. They send to the dwellers of the city of Kiryat Ya'arim, Lemor, to say, Heshivu Plishtim es Aron Hashem. Hey, good news, the Plishtim sent back the Aron. Redu ha'alu oso aleichem. Come down here and bring the Aron up to you. And sure enough, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, Vayavo anshe Kiryat Ya'arim vayalu es Aron Hashem vayaviyu oso al beis Avinadav ba'giv'ah. The people of Kiryat Ya'arim show up. They move the Aron home to their place. They bring it to the house of Abinadav in Giv'ah, as Elazar beno Kiddushu lishmor es Aron Hashem. They dedicate his son Elazar to take care of the Aron, to guard the Aron, and we're good. The death stops. So, why wasn't Kiryat Ya'arim afraid of the Aron? 50,000 people died in Beit Shemesh, and Kiryat Ya'arim doesn't even blink. Sorry, Byron, what? So Byron is suggesting already that we look at this text a little bit differently and say that they ignored it. Is that supported in the Psukim?
It says they looked at it, but they probably looked at it inappropriately while the men of Beit Ya'arim, Kiryat Ya'arim, were giving it appropriate deference.
So, ignoring it doesn't really seem to fit. Because the text actually says they got struck because they looked at it. So you can't say that. Maybe, though, they looked at it the wrong way, which I think is what Ori is suggesting. Moish, you were going to say something?
Maybe. Did they know what happened in the...
Ah. Ignorance is bliss. Maybe they aren't aware. Right? A little hard to say that when 50,000 people die. But they came to town and there are a bunch of new cemeteries. Like, it didn't dawn on them that, 50,000 is a very large number.
I have something I just saw now I never knew about.
Yeah.
Apparently, Shammai says there were two orders. One of which was already in, the city of Kiryat Ya'arim. So perhaps they were more familiar and less frightened.
Interesting. The Yerushalmi says the other Aron was already in Kiryat Ya'arim. Where is that Yerushalmi? I'm not familiar.
Let me send you the chat. Maybe I'm not reading it
correctly. I learned Shkalim, but I don't remember that. Let's see. Jerusalem Talmud Shkalim 6.1.12. There is also a verse that supports the opinion of Rebbe and Lakish. There were two arks, one they took with them into battle, one that remained in its place. Apropos the battle of King Saul with the Philistines, the verse states, and Saul said to Achiah, bring here the Ark of God. The Ark of God was there at that time with the children of Israel. This is puzzling. Wasn't the Ark in Kiryat Ya'arim at the time? That's ours. Therefore, it is clear there were two. Yeah, but now that's the other way. It was a great idea, but it's not. That's not what this Yerushalmi is saying. This Yerushalmi is talking about an event that takes place later in Shmuel, in which Shaul says, "Bring the Aron," and it says the Aron was with the children of Israel, and the Yerushalmi asks, "Wasn't it in Kiryat Ya'arim?" So the answer that Yerushalmi brings, which we'll see when we get to Perek Yedalit, is that actually this is a reference to two different Aronot. But it's a later period, and there is no Aron Kiryat Ya'arim right now. We don't know anything about the location of a second Aron at this stage. The idea of a second Aron is found in Chumash Bamidbar, and Ramban talks about it a lot. But it won't. No, this Yerushalmi is not addressing our case, unfortunately. It would have been a cool idea. So, all right, let's talk this through a little bit. First of all, important to recognize here that this is going to conclude a long polemic that began with the Jews abandoning the Mishkan back at the end of Sefer Shoftim, when we said no one was going to the Mishkan at that point. It continued with the sin of Chafni and Pinchas, where they took advantage of the Mishkan as their private preserve. Then them taking the Aron to war in Perek Daled. And then it continued with the Plishtim demonstrating awe for the Aron. We don't, but the Plishtim do. And then how the Plishtim kept the Aron with Dagon and how they honored Dagon. And then the honor they showed for the Aron when they returned it. This whole long passage has had the Jews lacking respect for Hashem and lacking respect for the Aron. And only Eli and the wife of Pinchas had that respect. Because when the word came of what had happened, what upset the most was the loss of the Aron. If you take a look at source number one on the sheet, you see Ralbag say this. Remember that Ralbag, on each section in that he comments on, he gives you toalot, lessons that you're supposed to learn from it. So here is lesson number 30 from the section that we're in. Lo'dia beis Yisrael asher ba'avuro nischayvu sheyiplu biyad plishtim, to let the Jews know that because of this, they were liable to fall to the plishtim. The this being the way they treated the Aram. The Plishtim had some respect for God. Amru, they said, Oy lanu, woe is us, mi yatzilenu miyada elokim adirim o'ela, who's going to save us from this great God? Uchshaba aron Hashem biyadam lakhu musar tekef. When they got the Aron, they immediately learned from that. V'shalchu oso b'chavod me'alehem. They didn't learn immediately. I mean, it's like 6 months, right? 7 months. It took them to learn. But 7 months by Jewish standards isn't so much. It takes us a lot longer. So they sent the Aron away, and they sent it with honor. So the ulam Yisrael ayu avdim ha-be'alim ha-shtaros. The Jews, on the other hand, are worshipping Baal and Astarte. The hemiru kvodam below yo'il. The Jews traded in their honor for that which could not help. V'lo lakhu musar b'chol ha-ra'os shevi Hashem yisbarach aleihem al-zeh. They didn't learn anything from all of the evils that God brought upon them. So this is why the Jews deserve to lose to the Plishtim, is because they don't understand how to treat the Aron. Not that they ignored it now, as much as they treated it with a lack of proper appreciation. Which brings us to the death toll. So the Gemara in Sota offers us a suggestion for how to read 70 and 50,000. It's in source number 2. And this, Byron, is where you'll also get the Targum, the idea as well. Vayach ba'am shivim ish, chamishim elef ish. Rabbi Avo, Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Avo and Rabbi Elazar debated this. Chad omar shivim ish hayu. One said the death toll was just 70 people. V'chol echad ve'echad shakul kachamishim elef. But they were the greatest. Each of them was worth 50,000 others. That's one approach. Second approach, v'chad amar, chamishim elef hayu. It was 50,000. V'chol echad ve'echad shakul kishiv im Sanhedrin. But each of them was the equal of the 70 elders who would be on a Sanhedrin. So it's either it's 70, each one the equal of 50,000, or 50,000, each one the equal of 70. Certainly the latter view is not bothered by the question of how in the world you had that many people in Beit Shemesh. But what are we supposed to do with this number? It really does seem very, very high. So Amos Chacham is quoted in the Dat Mikra on Shmuel with an old idea that you see referenced usually regarding the numbers in Chumash. You know, classic question, how did the Jews go in four generations from 70 to being millions and millions of people? 600,000 men of military age translates to a few million people who stand at Har Sinai. You count them in the census and you see 600,000 people, or 603,000 in the men of military age. So there is a notion which is brought up there, which may be borrowed here, which is that the word Aleph does not actually mean 1,000. Rather, Aleph is like Aluf, which is a family, a clan. So the idea would then be, according to that read, that there were 50 families who were struck in Beit Shemesh, and from those 50 families, 70 people died. Right? If you go back to the language in the Pasuk, Vayach ba'am shiv'im ish, chamishim elef ish. He struck among them 70 men from 50 clans of men. Not 50 clansmen, but 50 clans of men. Does this at all sound compelling as a read of the Pasuk? No. I didn't think so. But it's worth a shot. I find that very hard to accept. The Abar Benel's read is a little more helpful, and it helps explain as well why Kiryat Ya'arim is not so afraid. If you take a look at source number 3, he says, V'hanachon etzli, what seems right to me, is Shalom Eisu Ba'anshe Beit Shemesh Kim Shiv'im Ish Levad. 70 men died in Beit Shemesh. And they died because of one of the reasons that he's already mentioned in his commentary. Maybe they alone spoke inappropriately regarding the Aron, and what he's referring to is something that the Medrash records, and we're going to see it down in source number 5, Gemara in Sota, about an inappropriate reaction to the Aron, which we'll see. That's number one. These 70 men maybe were the ones who were guilty of that, or alternatively, the im she'elu levad lo azvu malachtam, they didn't stop working when the Aron came to town, following the view that it was that they ignored the Aron, or the im she'elu levad paschu ha'aron v'chnisu bo yidehem, they opened the Aron, and they actually put their hands inside, because if you looked at the language carefully, it said ra'u ba'aron, which you could read as they saw inside the Aron. So why does the text say 70 and 50,000? Ve'amnam ha'chamishim elef ish zachar, when it says 50,000 men, hu mispar ha'harugim asher mesu b'sibas ha'aron, it is the sum of those who were killed because of the Aron. Im be'arei ha'plishtim, whether in the Plishti cities, ve'im be'Beit Shemesh or in Beit Shemesh, shayu kulam chamishim elef ish, all told, it's 50,000. And the reason why it's brought here as a sum, because you're now capping the story of the plishtim, of the Aron's return, and it is completing, telling us about the wonders of the Aron and all those who died. And so the way to read this pasuk is not, they all died right now, but rather, Anshei Beit Shemesh got struck, and the nation collectively were struck, 70 men here, 50,000 men on the whole. What do you think? It's better. It's better than the Aluf idea. I think he gets points for solving the question of why it says Vayach Ba'am versus Vayach Be'anshe Beit Shemesh. I still think the language is a little bit clumsy, if that's what the Pasuk is trying to say. We have better ways to say it. I also think it's odd to think that it's counting the deaths of the Philistines with ours. That's not usually the way things work in the Torah. It could be said that he's actually going back also to include those who died in the war when they lost the Aron. That would certainly make it more likely that you're going to hit the 50,000 mark. So, the idea then, and now we have to talk about the cause, but the idea in the death toll is either a death toll right now in Beit Shemesh, or it is a broader death toll. But why did it happen? So the majority approach is what we've already said. The majority approach is that it happened because they treated the Aron with disrespect after it was returned. And it goes back to the language in sentence 13 in Pasuk Yud Gimel, when it said, Vayir'u es ha'aron. They saw the aron. So Radak says they uncovered it. They actually uncovered the aron. Malbim says they gazed at it without respect. And he plays on the grammar, specifically the bet. Vayar ba'aron. Vayir'u ba'aron. If you take a look at source number 4, Kira'u ba'aron Hashem. They looked in the Ark of God. Re'iyash acharav bet. When you see the verb to look at, to see. And then the next word starts with a beis. More al hasagasa. It's meant to indicate grasping something, gazing at it. Vehafla'a. And seeing clearly badavar. Vehahaskala b'mahuso. Perceiving its essence. And he gives you a pasuk from Parshas Bo. Vayar b'siv lo sam. He, God, saw their suffering. Ubala rov al inyanim hegyonim. It generally refers to abstractions, higionim. It refers to abstractions, not something that's concrete. Like, ve'al er'e b'ra'asi. Moshe says, I don't want to see the evil that will befall me, or my evil. Ure'e b'tuv Yerushalayim is another example. Ritzelamar she bitu bo yoser min hara'ui mi mi'ut hayir'ah v'hakavod. There isn't enough awe, there isn't enough respect, and therefore they gazed upon it inappropriately. That's one piece of it, is that the seeing was itself disrespectful. The Gemara takes it as more than just seeing. If you take a look at source number 5, Vayach be'anshei beit shemesh kira'u ba'aron, the Gemara asks, Mishum dera'u vayach? Because they saw the aron, therefore he hit them? What do you mean? So Rabbi Avo and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Avo and Rabbi Elazar debated. One said it's that they harvested while bowing. You know, if you ever see somebody who, while they're davening, is at the same time looking at their phone, and I don't mean that they have a sitter on their phone, or holding a conversation with somebody else, that's the image here. They're bowing, they're saying Aleinu, so to speak, right, while they're busy harvesting the grain. So that was considered an act of great disrespect. V'chad amar, mili nami amur. And the other one said, what Abarbanel noted before, they actually said rude things. What do you mean? Man amrich de imrias, uman asa alach de ifaisis. Their reaction to the aron was to say, who made you bitter that you became bitter? Imriach, like merry, which is bitter. Who made you bitter, God, or Aaron, that you became bitter? And who came to you that you were appeased and you decided to come back? Like, look who's here, they said about the Aaron. Oh, look, you decided to come back after all. So the Gemara is reading this as more than just seeing, but real disrespect as part of this. Clear? Well, Abarbanel has a different take altogether. Abarbanel says that's not what's going on. Rather, the plague happened after they moved the Aron out. Not before. The plague happened after they moved the Aron out, which explains why Kiryat Yearim is not afraid to get the Aron. Because nobody's dead yet. He says, the people in Beit Shemesh were afraid of having the Aron. They know the Aron is special. They're afraid they can't live up to the responsibility. So they say, look, somebody else take it. And therefore, says Abarbanel, they lost 70 men after the Aron moved. You follow? The text in the Psukim is then out of order. And remember, Abarbanel believes that the numbers, the death numbers that we get, are meant as a total for the entire story. So he says, the way to read this properly is, if you go back to chapter 6, Pasuk Yud Ches, sentence 18, had everything brought to the field of Yoshua of Beit Shemesh, then it tells us about the plague of Beit Shemesh in order to cap the story with the 70 and the 50,000. And then it tells us about them moving the Aron from Beit Shemesh to Kiryat Yearim, because that's really part of the next story, even though that happened before the plague and before the death. You with me? That's his approach. It reminds... Yeah. So if you take Abarbanel's approach that the 70 are the people locally and the 50,000 is from the nation as a whole through all of this experience, then I think it can work. Because then what you're saying is, if you go back to the language there, it wasn't clean in general, but that particular part is Vayach Ba'am Shivim Ish Chamishim Vayach Ba'anshei Beit Shemesh is a reference to the Shivim Ish, and Vayach Ba'am is a reference to the Chamishim Elef Ish. It's certainly not clean. But Abarbanel gave you his best shot, and he's moving on. He's like, you know, that's my answer for you. By the way, I want to adjust what I said before about Abarbanel's explanation of the 50,000. I said before that I thought he was including the Plishtim, but I think when he says those who died in the cities of the Plishtim, I don't think he means during the plague now. I think he means during the war. I think that may be what he means. I'm not sure he means the Plishti deaths. I could read it either way, but that's what I think he probably means. But what he's giving us here is not because of the 70 and the 50,000. What he's giving us here is to answer why Kiryat Yearim has no fear of taking the Aron. And he says it's because nobody's died yet. The reason for the plague was because they moved the Aron to Kiryat Yearim. How dare you move the Aron out of your city? Is basically the rationale for this to happen. It reminds me of, Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach records this, and I think I put it in the Bayit Bulletin for Sukkos, regarding Simchas Torah. Rav Chaim Brisker's practice was that he would not, if he was holding a Torah during Hakafos, he wouldn't look for somebody to take it from him. He would hold it, and eventually somebody might take it, and some years, as it's reported, he would just end up holding it through the rest of Hakafos. That was what he did. Why? Because it's rude to the Sefer Torah to look to get rid of it. So that's like this with Kiryat Yearim. It's with Beit Shemesh. It's wrong for them to look to get rid of it. So it's a second explanation for why they were killed. And then I would offer a third, and I think very simple explanation, which is it's not about what happens now. It's about what happened in the beginning of the story. It's punishment for taking the Aron to war as a totem and for not looking for it and continuing with life as usual once the Aron was taken by the Plishtim. It's a punishment for that. Sure, the Aron is back, but you guys are in trouble because of what you've done until now. Clear? Yeah. Well, that's easy. If you just leave it out, it works a lot better. Yeah,
just... consistent with one of the explanations, that there wasn't 50,000, but 70.
Yeah. Potentially, yes. So Kiryat Yearim is not afraid. Kiryat Yearim thinks they can take it. So I already have one answer for why they're not afraid. That they don't actually know, or because it hasn't actually happened yet. The deaths haven't happened. But I'd like to offer, another perspective here. What do we know about Kiryat Yearim? Not a whole lot. If you were to look up the psukim that I gave you in source number 6, the Pasuk in Yehoshua says that this is one of the main cities of the Giv'onim, the Chivi people who came to Yehoshua and tricked the Jews into making a pact with them. In Shoftim, it's where the people of Dan camp on their way before they steal the statue of Micha and then invade northern territory. There's a Tosefta in Makos, which I referenced on the sheet, which says it was a city of refuge. It was an Ir Miklat until they conquered Shechem, which is interesting. What do I get out of all three of those facts? One of the main cities of the Givonim / Chivi, the fact that it's where B'nai Dan camp before they go to steal Pesel Micha, and perhaps most important, its role as a city of refuge. What, combining those things, what does that tell you about this city? Well, I don't know if it's that regular, but it means that it's a city that's central for travel. You only have, for a city of refuge, a city that's central for travel. And it had a real population. It's not that far away from... Sorry?
Of Levium.
And that means it's a city of Levium as well, correct. Assuming that that's true even for the temporary city of refuge and not just the permanent ones. It's not that far away from Beit Shemesh. Malbim notes this. It actually shares certain traits with Yerushalayim. Rav Amnon Bazak points out, and the psukim that he refers you to are on the sheet in source number 6 from Yoshua chapter 18, that it's between two hills of Binyamin, which we also know as an identifier for Yerushalayim in the Medrash, the pasuk Ben Ksefav Shachin. Between the shoulders is where the Beis HaMikdash goes. So, sharing traits with Yerushalayim means it's an appropriate place for the Aron, which is interesting. But I think fundamentally, if I take the view that the plague happened earlier, which is the majority view, not like Abarbanel, then you have to suggest that Kiryat Yearim thinks that they're going to treat the Aron better than Beit Shemesh did. They must believe that there's something about them that they're going to be better for the Aron than Beit Shemesh. And you could probably, you may link it to what it says in Perek Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, when we're told that they designated somebody, Kiddushu, they sanctified and they consecrated him to guard the Aron of Hashem. We don't know anything about this fellow Elazar besides this. That's all we're ever going to find out. But just the fact that they consecrate somebody and say, you're guarding the Mishkan, already puts them ahead of the people of Beit Shemesh. Okay.
Just a curious question.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to the concept, I forget who it was who died just trying to...
Uzzah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the moving of the Aron wasn't the problem in that story, right? It was trying to catch it that was the issue. I don't know, because it doesn't say here how they transported it. Whether it's, we assume it's not on the original wagon because we think they broke that up already. It doesn't say how they're transporting it, but we transported the Aron all the time. Uzzah's problem is just that it's falling, or he thinks it's falling, and he reaches out to catch it. So, I would guess, that wasn't the story here. Certainly, if that was what went wrong and led to the deaths, then Iker Chaser Min HaSefer. We really should have said that. Yeah. A closing note on this chapter. Take a look at source number 7. Article from early 2019. Biblical site tied to Ark of the Covenant unearthed at convent in central Israel. A massive 8th century BCE man-made platform discovered at a Catholic convent in central Israel may have served as an ancient shrine to the Ark of the Covenant, said leading Tel Aviv University archaeologist Israel Finkelstein. Unearthed at Kiryat Yearim, the shrine gives potential new insight into the political machinations of the sibling kingdoms of Judah and Israel, meaning 8th century before the Common Era is too late for it to be from the time period of this story. this story would have had to have been somewhere around, it depends a little bit on what you do with the missing 166 years, but this story would have had to have been about 200 years earlier, 200 to 400 years earlier than when they found the platform. But we keep reading. The large elevated platform, Finkelstein believes, was constructed by the Northern Kingdom, by Israel, as a shrine to the biblical story of the Ark. According to Thomas Romer, an internationally known expert on the Hebrew Bible, the biblical stories surrounding the Ark of the Covenant served pragmatic political purposes. The kernel of the original narrative was to legitimate Kiryat Yearim as the new sanctuary of the shrine after the destruction of or the abandonment of Shiloh, wrote Romer. So, leaving aside his philosophy of the biblical text, and taking him for what he does know how to do, which is archaeology, it's entirely possible that the people of Yisrael, of the Northern Kingdom, build this as a way to legitimize their kingdom. Look, we have holy places also. The Aron stayed in Kiryat Yearim. So we are going to build a shrine on the site of Kiryat Yearim. You follow? Yeah?
Wasn't it close to Yehuda and Yamin? So, what you're getting there, wasn't that?
Yeah, it is in Yehuda, jutting into Binyamin. Like Binyamin wraps around Yehuda a little bit. There's sort of the line goes like that, and then it's within that. Right. So, the answer would have to be, and I don't know the borderlines, the answer would have to be that Kiryat Yearim somehow ends up in the Northern Kingdom, even though Binyamin stays with Yehuda in Yehuda. Either that or they're just wrong and it's not Yisrael, it's actually Yehuda. I don't know. I hadn't thought about it before, but those are your two solutions, right? Either the territory ends up in the north, even though Binyamin sides with Yehuda, and this is actually part of Yehuda, or the article's wrong.
You know Israel Finkelstein, his thing? He's a proponent of the low chronology.
Yeah.
Which was the alternate chronology that didn't mesh with the Torah, or the accepted chronology that came out of the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
He's a little bit of a controversial
figure. Okay. Well, then I'm happy to disagree with him. Interesting. I'm not up on... I've heard his name, but I'm not up on his views. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah?
Or it's near, like, the borders of it, so...
Okay.
I think it could or could not.
Got it. All right. Thank you. Yeah, now, when I taught Sefer Yehoshua, and I got to the geography parts originally, we actually used Google Maps to try to hunt for different places, knowing that the sites that carry these names are not on the same exact place as they once were. But yeah, it's terribly hard to visualize from the psukim. And if nothing else, Google Maps is entertaining. Okay. So now we have to work with a calendar problem. And this is very much not straightforward, but we'll see what we can do. We'll start on it tonight and it's going to continue to next week. Take a look at Pasuk Beis, please. Sentence 2. Vayhi miyom sheves ha'aron b'kiryat ya'arim. And it was from the day when the Aron settled in Kiryat Yarim. Vayirbu hayamim, there were a lot of days. Vayihyu esrim shana, they were 20 years. Vayinahu kobeis Yisrael acharei Hashem. The word vayinahu is a strange word. It is generally assumed to mean that they followed God in some sense. I don't know what you have in your translations for vayinahu. Sorry, what'd you say?
Yearned.
They yearned after God. Is that what the others have?
Drawn after.
Okay, so they went after God. So, do you realize why there's a problem with this pasuk? With chronology specifically. I'll tell you what. Let's read the next few psukim, and then it'll become more clear. Maybe I stopped too soon. Vayomer Shmuel o kobeit Yisrael lemor. Shmuel said to all Israel, "In bechol levavchem atem shavim el Hashem. If you're returning to God with all your hearts, hasiru es Elohei haneichar mitochachem v'ashtaros." He borrows a phrase from Yaakov. Remove all of the foreign gods from your midst. Remove the ashtarot, idols of Astarte. V'achinu levavchem el Hashem. Turn your hearts to God. V'ivduhu levado, serve only God. V'yatzel eschem miyad plishtim, and he will save you from the plishtim. And sure enough, pasuk dalid, v'yasiru b'nei Yisrael es ha-be'alim v'esel ashtarot. The Jews get rid of Baal, they get rid of Astarte. V'yavdu es Hashem levado, and they only served God. And then Shmuel says, I'm going to now daven for you to Hashem, and he davens for them. And this is actually one of the highlights of Tanakh, the rest of this chapter, which we'll talk about. But do you start to see the problem? The calendar issue? Tell me something. How long did Shmuel live?
52 years.
52 years. If Eli became Kohen Gadol and Shofet, or just Shofet, really, the year before Shmuel was born, right? Chana shows up at the Mishkan, he's sitting on the Kisei. You had 40 years from then until Eli's death, because Eli served as a Shofet for 40 years. That means that Shmuel at that point is 39 years old. Add 20 to 39 and what do you get? But he's dead at 52. Right? We have a problem. We have a bigger set of problems here. When did they do tshuva within this 20-year period? When did the tshuva happen? At the end of the 20 or during the 20? Yeah.
It's part of the person in and of itself.
Yeah.
So why couldn't it just be that there was one after this point, after the point in which the Aaron stayed in Kiryat Yearim, there were 20 good years.
Yeah.
And then moving on to the next episode. Okay, so during the 20 years.
Good. So that is going to be one of the approaches, and it's going to be an approach brought in the Gemara in Zvachim, is going to suggest that. What Idan just suggested is that the Aron is actually, the Aron is in Kiryat Yearim for 20 years, during which time the Jews are following Hashem, and at some point in the 20, Shmuel holds this big gathering for them. So before we get to that answer in greater depth, and before we start seeing other approaches as well, are these 20 years during which they do tshuva, or are these 20 years before they do tshuva? You have problems either way. If you're going to tell me that it's 20 years during which they do tshuva, then I have a lot of problems. Number one, what was this gathering about? They're doing tshuva during the 20 years, so this gathering is not like a special occasion, at least as we can tell. Further, I don't know why you mentioned the 20 years at all. Who needed you to mention 20 years at this point? This is happening at some point within the 20 years. And if these 20 years are before they do tshuva, then I have a real problem, because then you can't even use Idan's answer, because this gathering seems to be with a righteous nation that's getting rid of its idols. That would have to be at the end of the 20 years. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's 20 years before the gathering, not 20 years before the gathering. I don't know if when they do tshuva, why they do tshuva. It's a very perplexing passage. So what we're going to see are essentially three schools of thought that try to solve this. The first one is brought by the Gemara in Zvachim, and Ralbag brings it as a view as well. The second view is Ralbag's own view that he offers, and the third view is from Metzudat David. Where this will lead us ultimately is the conclusion that various commentators have, that they reject the view that Shmuel dies at the age of 52. They say Shmuel lives much longer than 52. And that's going to be Abarbanel, that's going to be Ralbag, that's going to be Metzudas David. It's a revolt of the Mefarshim. They cannot accept the idea that Shmuel dies at age 52. And Abarbanel especially has a whole lot of reasons for saying that. So what I'm going to suggest here is that we stop here and pick up next time fresh with these 20 years, and I'll have a table and all of that, and we'll try to figure out all the different events and where they fit. Okay? All right. Thank you very much, everyone.